Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host.
I hope Darren had you potted up there.
No, he did not. Chris Check, our guest, is the president of Catholic Answers. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest, is a writer of great renown for his wonderful books like Pope Peter and A Man Named Joseph. And this new one, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, How Christ's Body and Blood Are the Key to Everything We Believe. Get it. It's a great book. And get to know Jesus, get closer to Jesus. Yep, we talk about the news of the day wearing flannel shirts. We don't know why somebody knows why we wear the flannel shirts, but I know why we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective, because it's fun to do and it's interesting, and you're going to get the news all over and very little of the Catholic perspective. We kind of actually think that the Catholic perspective is helpful in evaluating the news. You can call 888-318-7884. I said that last hour, and then I never even looked over at Thomas to see if there were any calls. I'm sorry about that,
Thomas. There was one call about the Protestant work ethic wanting us to explain more about it.
Wait, somebody want? Was there really? Are you joking?
I'm not joking. I actually looked, but...
Oh, you looked at the... Well, we can get back to that, but
yeah,
I think...
Yeah, Tom from Omaha. Listening on KVSS. Is that Spirit?
Spirit Catholic Radio, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
He said, can you talk more about the Protestant work ethic? What kind of work ethic should a Catholic have?
Catholic work ethic.
What's
you're
the
listening
next
to Catholic Radio, Tom. Like, what did you think the answer was going to be? A Catholic work ethic.
I
this is what's called. It's
what
called living a fully integrated life. That's what we're looking for. What does that mean, Chris?
The liturgical feasts, all the days off.
Like yesterday with...
You're making this sound pretty great.
Catholicism is great.
Catholic Answers was closed yesterday for the Holy Day.
Catholicism is
some of the nuance with it. You know, work is good. Work is given to Adam in the garden. So it's not even just like a consequence of the fall. But work should be something that enhances human dignity rather than something that demeans it. And so if you have a job that is against your dignity as a human... you should probably look for a different job.
Well, not just that, Joe. It's not just whether your job is against human dignity.
Yeah,
the way the system of work works can also be against human dignity. Like not giving people enough days off or treating people merely as human resources rather than as human beings.
I hate
beings.
That expression.
These things are not they don't comport with human dignity. Using people merely as a means to an end, putting people in jobs that are bad for their health and then not taking care of their health. All of these things would be contrary to the Catholic worth ethic.
Well, also making a god out of your work,
right?
You know,
yep.
A violation of the first commandment.
Yeah. So Juliet Shore, a sociologist, looked to see what the work life was of a medieval peasant. We imagine it just being horrible. And the work itself was, you know, hard. But anywhere from 150 to like 240 days off per year.
Well, this is something that
that's days off. That's like 8 weeks to a half year off.
Look, if you really want to get in an argument at a party, say something about libertarianism. But if you don't want to have that kind of argument, say America should have more paid holidays. And it would be amazing to you how many people will say that is absolute nonsense, that's utter foolishness.
Well, we don't even get Good Friday off in America.
Yeah, this is a Protestant country. So here's the thing. With respect to the California missions, it was very popular, and still is, I suppose, to describe the California missions as plantations and basically the neophytes there or the natives who were living there were slaves, and they talk about life under the bell. That was the expression, under the bell. Well, what the bell actually did is it called people to prayer. It told them when to stop working.
Right.
And when you look at actually, and the records, the primary source documentation is there from the California missions. As with any of the reducciones, for example, in Uruguay and Paraguay, these people, as Joe said, they had a lot of days off.
Yeah.
Because human beings
need days off.
Well, and there were so many feast days on the liturgical calendar.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So
by the way, this is something we get from the Romans. Rome, pagan, and we'll talk about this when we go to Rome. By the way, come to Rome with a flannel panel.
Oh, I didn't even think to invite. We still have a few spots open, and we're only going with 50 people. So if you want, check out.
You can be from any of the states, even the bad ones.
Even the bad states.
Catholic
Answers Pilgrimage.com. Catholic Answers Pilgrimage.com. You can come from Europe. If you're listening in Europe, come down and join us. You know, airfare is cheaper, or take the train. And another thing that Catholic societies are better at? Trains? But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that we have this notion or this sort of comic book idea that Catholic or Christian Rome replaces pagan Rome. It doesn't. It transforms it in Christ. And the whole life of festivals that the pagan Romans lived, the church brings this into her own and she baptizes it.
Well, when the mechanizing of society, which is what I'm going to talk Friday night about in my talk.
Cy Kellett is speaking here in Rockford. It's like it happens to me.
I do the same thing.
It's been 12 years.
Yeah. I welcome people to my elementary school sometimes because I forget where I am.
Let me try again. Here in San Diego at Therese of Carmel in Carmel Valley.
On Friday night.
At 7 o'clock.
Talking about.
And we start on time.
What the Industrial Revolution did to our spiritual lives. And, you know, you could start with a very, very basic question, which is, why is it so much harder? And this is not my question. This comes from a great philosopher. Why is it so much harder to believe in God today than it was 200 years ago? Well, we could start with, you have much less contact with God's creation than you had 200 years ago.
So Romano Guardini makes this point in his Letters from Lake Como.
Letters from Lake Como. I'll be talking about that a little bit. I don't know. Now I'm off the point, but we were talking about the Catholic work ethic. Why would the Catholic work ethic be different than the Protestant?
Because it includes
siesta.
You can
kind of take it for granted that, we've got a different kind of vision of work, but it's probably worth spelling out what that is, which is that work is good, but it's not supposed to be all-consuming.
Right.
That you should work to live rather than live to work. And well, so, we're not Marxists, but we're also not these hyper-capitalists who think you have to, that you live to make money for your boss.
Exactly. And can I tell you one other side of that is what we do when we're not working is also not like what the medieval people did, in that going to a festival where your family and friends are there and there's drinking and there's partying and there's, games and all this is completely different than getting on a jet by yourself or with one or two other people and going to whatever hot spot you're going to. We go on vacation now to get away from the life we live. Medieval people celebrated together in a community. There's something much more restful about that, being with your community, in your community. It's not to say that a vacation is not a good idea. But the fact that we work to get money to go on vacation is very different than work to bring in a crop that we can all share together at a great festival. It's just a different way of life and an inferior way of life when it comes to human dignity. Let's go to Robert in Florida, listening on 95.5 FM. Robert, we kept you waiting, but we did invite calls, so go ahead with your call. Sorry. Could you help me with line one? I messed up there. Robert, go ahead.
Yes.
I made a mistake. Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. My question is, y'all's organization's direct ties to the Catholic Church itself, the Vatican? Do you answer to them, bishops or anyone at all?
Chris, that'd probably be best for you to take that.
Catholic Answers is, in the language of the church, what we call an apostolate. We are recognized by our bishop, the Ordinary of San Diego, Cardinal McElroy, as an apostolate in good standing. So we have a good relationship with our diocese. We don't receive any, and by the way, it is the responsibility of the bishop, in the case of any lay-run apostolate, to make sure that, whether it's a hospital or an educational institution such as ours, to make sure that what they're doing is in accord with Catholic teaching. But that's where his, oversight is, that's where it begins and ends. When you say, do we take orders from the Pope or do we take instructions from the Pope? Well, I mean, we do in the sense that all Catholics do recognize the Holy Father as the Vicar of Christ, but we don't have a we don't have regular communication.
There's no organizational tie.
Yeah, right.
We're not getting memos to be like, hey, be sure on Thursday you mention this.
Do a radio program. Like that. Yeah.
Although if the Vatican sends me a memo, I'll probably do what they say just because I'll be so excited that I got a memo from the Vatican. But
I want to make sure. Is it Robert?
Yeah, Robert.
Robert, that I'm answering your question.
Do we get what you wanted?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Are you Catholic, Robert, or just a listener?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are. Okay. Good.
Pretty new Catholic.
Oh,
welcome home, brother.
Well, God bless you. Welcome home. Maybe we could send you a copy of Joe's book. The Eucharist really is Jesus. You want a copy of Joe's book? That's a long pause.
Yeah,
that was a long pause. You are now my favorite listener, Robert. You are my favorite listener.
He's going to ask you to make some mean letter after this.
Made Joe sweat. All right, hang on, Robert. We'll get your information.
I was just noticing you mispronounced get the order of the words wrong in the book.
Did I say Jesus really is the Eucharist?
You said the Eucharist really is Jesus.
Oh, really? Oh, no, the Eucharist is really Jesus. I apologize.
It's okay.
It's okay. I just needed to bring it up on air. Okay, we'll be I'll be right back with more Flannel Panel, Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN uses the power of radio to reach people whenever and wherever they're searching for answers to questions about their Catholic faith. EWTN Radio is heard on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates. For a complete list of programs and how to hear EWTN Radio, visit EWTN.com and click radio. EWTN, the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Chris Cech, Joe Heschmeyer are our guests. Joe's book is called The Eucharist is Really Jesus. That is the correct title for Joe's fine new book. You can get it over at shop.catholic.com. Let me see if there's a sale going on at shop.catholic.com. Well, I'll figure out in a minute. No, I don't see a sale. So wait. Don't buy it now because there's going to be a sale soon. Shop time. That's a terrible ad. That was the worst ad ever. I'm not good at this at all.
Genuinely bad at your job.
You've said that before, and then you get a letter when you say I'm genuinely bad at my job.
I think if I say it enough, people will be like, I notice every time he says that, Son's just done something terribly wrong.
All right, I'm going to read you guys a story from Massachusetts, and I want you to guess before I read the story. Is this story good for Catholics or bad for Catholics? Based on the name of the state, Massachusetts.
No, I'm going to go with bad.
I'm going to go for bad as
you
well.
You both think it's going to be bad for Catholics just because it comes from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? A Massachusetts couple filed a complaint.
Oh, it's bad. I know this one.
A Massachusetts couple filed a complaint this week against the state's health secretary and multiple officials in the Department of Children and Families after their application to become foster parents was denied over their stance on LGBTQ people. Michael and Catherine Kitty Burke began the months-long application process with the DCF to foster or adopt a child in January of 2022. According to the complaint, the process involves screenings to gauge the couple's views on raising children from historically marginalized groups, including LGBTQ children. A social worker's report attached to the complaint said that the couple was asked how they would feel if their child in their care identified as LGBTQ or struggled with their identity. Kitty Burke responded by saying, let's take the T out of it, and called gender-affirming care chemical castration. According to the report, she also said,
by the way, it literally is unlike gender-affirming care. It's the opposite,
of gender-affirming care. Yes.
It is actually changing or attempting to change your gender through chemical castration. So Kitty Burke is actually telling the truth. The article is not.
The truth has nothing to do with it. This is that was not what we're concerned with here. She also said, I'm going to love you the same, but that child would need to live a chaste life. Both Kitty and Michael Burke expressed hesitation around using a transgender or non-binary person's preferred pronouns in the social worker's report.
I think Boston still has a lot of Irish need not apply signs somewhere. They can just bust those out.
That's a good point, Joe. Let's just dig in and say, well, this time it'll be Irish Catholics need not apply, not just Irish.
That was why they didn't want the Irish in the first place.
Yeah, I know. But
so, you know, every time we hear a story like this, I think we're all a little shocked that it actually happened. But the truth is that there are vast numbers of anti-Catholics and anti-Christians in government. They've certainly been in schools for a very, very long time, but their presence isn't limited to schools. They're in all kinds of other bureaucratic roles in government. I think of the FBI report that people who go to the Latin Mass are, you know, enemies of the state. And it turns out now that report was not confined merely to one city, but it included, I think, Los Angeles and Portland as well, or Portland and one other city. There were three cities. So there were multiple FBI agents who were authoring this.
Yeah, sending spies to Mass. I mean, literally.
Did they really? I didn't know that actually happened. I honestly stopped following the story, and I didn't realize that this other stuff had come out. And then sinister.
I think of the example that our friend Grace Williams, who runs Children of the Immaculate Heart here, where she's rescuing minor girls from street trafficking, had to go through with the state of California in order to get license. And it was the same kind of thing. You know, will you drive one of your clients to the abortuary? And she said, well, no, this is a Catholic organization. We're not going to do that. And so they're not going to license her home. As if there is a superabundance of homes in California to rehabilitate girls from a life of sexual slavery.
I want to make sure you make this, because this is such a big point. You're literally using the most vulnerable members of society as pawns, where you say, we would rather than just languish in the system and not go to a loving home. Yeah. This is the exact thing they accuse us of doing on gay adoption. But they're the ones actually doing this.
Right. Because I do know this. Do you know what it's like for a child as a ward of the state? There's almost no home you could put them in that's worse than that. And these are loving people who can take a child out of that position, which is a horror for a child to be the ward. The state does not love a child. It can't love a child. And the very best it can do, and it rarely does this, is keep a child safe. And that child can get out of that situation, but this social worker won't let them because the parents think that they won't use they're not going to use the pronouns because they don't, you know, that it will, they're not going along with that.
Hypothetically, the child could come out, and hypothetically, in that situation, maybe they wouldn't handle it well. If you read the article, it's shocking precisely because the Massachusetts couple is not like, we would kill our child, we'd kick him out of the house. There's nothing of that.
No, we'd love the child.
The dad says, like, I've been to gay weddings. I'd probably go to theirs, but I'm not going to approve of the sexually active lifestyle. It is about as moderate a position as you could come up with, short of a full-on endorsement. And it's like, if this is going to be the case, you have to tell every believing Christian and every believing Muslim, you're not allowed to have kids. You're not allowed to adopt kids. You're not allowed to. And by that standard, how long before the government says, well, if you can't adopt a kid safely,
why should you be allowed
to keep the children you've had?
Yeah, we need to start licensing parents, and those crazy Catholics may not have a license.
Just have a limit to policy.
I would like to just correct something that Kitty said, but because I'm a big fan of Kitty Burke now, even though I don't know her. But she said that child would need to live a chaste life. I would just amend to that. Every human being must live a chaste life. This is a requirement of human dignity. An unchaste life is an undignified life. And it's not worthy of you. Everyone must live a chaste life. Chastity is different in different life situations, but I worry about when we just associate chastity with homosexuality.
Chastity is for everyone. People associate chastity with celibacy.
I see. Yeah, right. They think
even there, I mean, I know Marco Casanova and Andy Kaminsky have been on from Desert Streams. Someone who struggles with same-sex attraction, they don't have to only live in this place of self-denial. They can try to become reintegrated with their body. Your body is heterosexual. It is one of the ways Marco talks about it. That, you know, if you talk about the human reproductive system, you have half of one. And there's a member of the opposite sex with the other half of that system. And you don't have a system by yourself. This is not something that you just decide entirely internally in terms of attraction. There's a biological reality there. And so there are people who struggle with, you know, attraction to people who aren't the person they're meant to marry, not just people with LGBTQ whatever attraction, but heterosexual people as well. Believe it or not, a lot
it's
of men
the same struggle.
Find women who aren't their wife attractive, and they have to, you know, come to grips with that, so, which is why I think chastity is a universal call.
Yeah. Chris, I feel like
I was just going to say it's also the recipe for happiness.
Yeah.
And, right. And an unchaste life is a recipe for being miserable.
So I don't know what's going to happen. This is in this, I think it's a suit now in the state of California. This is
Massachusetts.
In the state of Massachusetts. Everything's California.
I see how you confuse those two.
But in the state of Massachusetts, and here's the thing. Years ago, I'm loath to do this, but I cannot control myself at the moment. So maybe I should be exercising greater self-control. Years ago, when we were all fighting over gay marriage, I remember people on our side saying, it's not going to stop with gay marriage. You're going to force everybody to go along. Schools will have to go along. Adoptive parents will have to go. And we were told, no, 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 you're a bigot.
If you don't like gay marriage, don't have one.
If you don't like gay marriage, don't have one. And guess who was wrong and guess who was right on that? Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we were right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And these people by design have filled in the positions in the various bureaucracies at the different agencies, not just in education, which is, I think, where it began. But now, anywhere a decision like this can be made that is anti-Christian, there's a bureaucrat there ready to make that decision.
But when we talk about culture war issues, it usually is in the context of, moral conservatives pushing back to just to restore what was considered the ordinary opinion of 10 years ago or 15 years ago, as if this is some revolutionary dystopia. And the people who are aggressively pushing this new gender ideology and saying, if you don't agree with this, you literally can't adopt a child, you can't run a business, you can't do any of these things. That, for some reason, doesn't get labeled as like you're a culture warrior with a crazy aggressive agenda. And it just seems like we should, even if you are totally on board with the alphabet soup agenda, you could hopefully still say, it's insane to do this at the expense of a child or at the expense of a trafficked young woman or whatever. Leave the culture war at the door on these critical kind of issues. Don't say we can only help victims if we're going to also provide them abortions. Don't say we can only adopt children if we're also going to, you know, promote the gay agenda. You know, just leave those issues alone for the good of somebody other than your own small-minded narcissistic sexual expression.
Right? Yeah, I get the feeling, though, at this point, Joe, that these folks are so doctrinaire about the point, they really don't care about the carnage. They do not at all. They may say that they do, but some of them may in fact think they do. But there's
a kind of madness about it.
Well, it is madness. The governor of Illinois, Pritzker is his name, sent $250,000 from his campaign fund to the bad guys in Ohio.
Oh, on that abortion question that they just
on the referendum, on the constitutional
one or
amendment,
something it was called.
To try to. By the way, a 60% majority doesn't seem like a, it seems like a reasonable bar to me to make a constitutional change. But in any case, somebody from a state that doesn't even neighbor Ohio,
right,
sends $250,000,
yeah,
to Ohio, so that the killing of children can continue or ramp up in Ohio.
Yeah, but nobody on MSNBC or CNN, they're not going to identify him as a culture warrior.
If you're sending your gubernatorial campaign funds to another state so that the killing of babies can proceed at a greater pace than it currently is.
What I would say to Catholics is don't be dissuaded by this. If you have the call, if you have the time, the energy, the ability to foster children, foster them. Do it. Because, first of all, the rewards are tremendous. Adopt children. It's a great, great service. That child that you will adopt You're giving them an opportunity that otherwise it's just not going to be there, because there's, especially if you're able to adopt children with any kind of disabilities or older children or children that come with brothers and sisters, all of these are difficult, but don't let the system push you out. Because we got to love these kids despite the sometimes obnoxious people who are standing between them and you.
And if you have the stomach for a lawsuit, then jump in, because guys like Paul Jonah here, our friend, and Chuck Lemandry, they're winning these suits against the bureaucrats.
I don't understand how these people will I mean, I don't know what will happen in the state of Massachusetts, but won't this Joe eventually go to the Supreme Court?
And it could. I mean, the Supreme Court has to decide to take it. So, I mean, it has to go through some steps.
It seems like a 14th Amendment problem to me. And I know, Chris, you and I disagree about the 14th Amendment. But it's there, and it would seem to suggest you can't just disqualify people on the basis of a religious belief from adoption.
Yeah, I mean, it among other things, it does seem like there's even some First Amendment issues. Because if you're saying... And we're going to have a two-tiered system of civil life, and those who follow this religion get lesser benefits.
That's
that
called
does seem to impede the free, you know, dimitude is
yeah, this is called Sharia law, I was going to say.
No,
we're living under secular Sharia, or at least that's what they would like. We're not living under that, but that's what some would like, I suppose. We're going to take a quick break and be back. Pope Francis said something shocking on an airplane. At least the world media was shocked by it. I wonder if you'll feel shocked by it. We'll share that when we come back. Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
In These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes, best-selling author Rod Bennett gives a riveting re-examination of gospel events from the ground-floor perspective of Christ's own hand-picked successors. In his trademark storytelling style, Bennett movingly depicts what it was like for the apostles to witness Jesus' teaching and miracles up close. Order your copy of These 12 today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Is God an angry God?
We answer questions like these every day on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Chris Check is our guest, president of Catholic Answers. And Joe Heschmeyer, also our guest, apologist here at Catholic Answers, and the founder of Shameless Popery. That's his podcast now. It used to be a blog. Now it's promoted itself to podcast. It's evolving. Who knows what it'll be next time. It'll be a movie studio soon or something. I don't know. And you can find it at shamelessjoe.com. If you want to know all the good stuff about the Catholic Church, you want to know how to defend it, check out shamelessjoe.com. I'm going to go to a phone call because we haven't let very many people through on the phones yet today. And I blame you guys for being entertaining and interesting. So let's go to Trinette in Ohio, listening on AM 910. Trinette, thanks very much for the call. Go ahead with your question or comment or whatever you got.
Sure. Sure. Thank you so much for taking me. This is exciting. I would love to get the panel's take on something that I am struggling with. So I work for a company, and they really promote the what's called the inclusion and equality, but it's
Target.
Hello?
Starbucks.
Oh no!
I'm just going to shout out companies until you tell me what it is.
InBev.
A long list, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. I'm just playing Trinette. Go ahead. So you the.
No, that's okay. But
what company does it? Yeah. Go ahead. Anna.
Well, yeah. So I switched jobs just in October, and the culture is very different. And I told the gentleman who took the call that I honestly feel like I'm working in purgatory because I feel like they're ramming the transgender, the bi, the homosexual, you know, gay, lesbian, do whatever you want, be whatever you want, and it's against what I believe in my. And me, you know, so I struggle with this every day. And it's so much, though, that you join a group because we have these impact plans and it's your annual evaluation and they want to see your involvement with these affinity groups.
Whoa.
I can't even join. I told my manager, I was like, I can't join any of these because it's totally against what I believe, what I grew up and, you know, what I live by. So I don't know. The struggle
well, first
is
of all,
so
good
real.
For you for being able to articulate that. That takes a great deal of strength, I think, to do that to your manager. It is obnoxious, it seems to me, that your extracurriculars would be judged by the company. That's very odd. I don't see how that's helping them retain employees. Maybe it helps them get rid of some that they don't want. Joe, your take?
Well, no, I think all of that's very true. It's a gross violation of your rights as a worker. And in terms of like anything like a work-life balance, when you're having your employer look over your shoulder to be like, how do you spend your free time or what do you believe personally? That is such a gross overstepping of their boundaries and shows real failure on their part to understand what their role is as an employer. You know, their role isn't to hire you on so they can indoctrinate you. At least it shouldn't be. And so if they failed to understand that, it speaks to something really sick in the organizational culture. And I think because of that, you should take seriously the question of whether you'd be happier somewhere else. Now, on the really particular question, do you have a moral duty to leave? The answer is no, typically not. The exception would be if you're directly being required to promote this sort of stuff. And it sounds like they're trying to push in that direction, but they're not there. As long as you can conscientiously say, I'm not on board with this, I'm not going to say or do anything that suggests that I am, then you're okay. And the example I would give you is in Luke chapter 3. Different groups come to John the Baptist, including tax collectors and soldiers. Now, the tax collectors and soldiers are working in some kind of shady parts of the Roman Empire. And they're working in organizational settings, we'll say, that aren't always on the up and up and that have done bad things, ripping people off, invading innocent countries, you know, that sort of thing. And yet John the Baptist doesn't tell them they all have to quit. He gives much more moderate advice, telling them not to rob, telling them to be content with their wages, rob no one by violence, by false accusation, and collect no more than is appointed to you. And so conduct yourself as an extremely conscientious employee. And one way to think about it is like this. If you get to a point where you have to leave for the sake of your own sanity or because they've pushed the agenda too far, you want them to really regret the fact that they lost you. And so you should be the kind of employee that they would really regret losing. And that's actually a way you can be a witness to Christ in this.
I'm going to ask Joe some legal advice here. Trinette, I want to get some legal advice for you because Joe's also a lawyer in addition to being a million other things.
I am not currently... licensed state to practice law,
but it seems to me that if you have a company that's doing these things, and at some point you're terminated because you didn't go to the right rally or whatever, you would want to have a notebook filled with the occasions on which you were pressured or what.
Oh yeah, so in all of this stuff, it's a very good point. You should get everything in writing if you can. Say and you should be polite but firm. Say, I want to make sure I'm understanding expectations and I'm required to believe and profess these things to work here. Could you please send that to me in an email or You know, do you mind if I record this Skype call or whatever it is, you know, where as much stuff as you can get documented, that also tends to put organizational bullies a little bit on the back foot because they don't want someone else peering in and looking at how they're pushing subordinates around. And once they know there's a chance someone else with maybe a more hostile gaze would look at it, then that will sometimes rectify the problem because they're getting away with it because they're predators and they're bullies in many cases. And now, obviously, not in some cases are just well-meaning ideologues who are really committed to changing the world. But in a lot of these cases, they're just pushing their own stuff because they know nobody's going to push back. And so if you just document stuff and are clear that you're documenting it, not in an aggressive way yourself, but just being forthright, say, I'd love to get this in writing. I'd love to get this recorded just to make sure I know what's expected of me to work here. That can sometimes help to curb.
I think Joe's given wonderful advice, and the only thing that I would add to it is be cheerful through the whole process. And you sound like a very cheerful person, and I understand this must be very, very frustrating, and there's probably times where you really want to just lose it there in the office building. But yeah, I would just say that till you get home and work it out with the kick bag or whatever in the garage. But
he does not mean your husband. He means
but or go climb a mountain. Well, they don't have any of those in Ohio. Kind of in the South, I guess. There's like these
climb a rolling hill.
Yeah.
But, a rolling rock.
Right, exactly.
But you know, be cheerful through it all, and that will also have the effect of what Cy or Joe said, or one of you said. You both.
That was Joe.
Yeah, they lost you.
Yeah. Can I give a movie recommendation and a saint recommendation? They're going to be the same.
Yeah.
It's St. Thomas More and Watch a Man for All Seasons, because he's navigating a very difficult situation where organizationally, we'll say, England is getting crazier and crazier. And he has to figure out, what can I say yes to? What can I go along with? What do I have to really stand my ground on? And one of the principles there that St. Thomas More really exemplifies is, we're not just trying to start fights as Christians. We're not just saying, like, how can I get aggrieved? How can I get offended? But we are saying, there's a line I'm not going to cross, and here's what it is.
Trinette, I'd like to give
I'd
like to give you a book. Would you like a book about Jesus or a book about Peter?
Oh my gosh, I'd like both, but either one would be great. Yes, I would love a book.
You know, right. Joe has a book about Jesus now.
Let's
start with
the Eucharist.
All right,
which of Joe's book are you going to send?
I'm going to send you Joe's book, Pope Peter, and then I'm going to send you my book, A Teacher of Strange Things. That one's about Jesus, and thank you for saying both. That's the closest I ever came to anyone actually asking for my book, was you saying both. Got to take a quick break. Right back with what the Pope said on an airplane recently on a flannel panel, Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples. Disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, Saturday at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, flannel panel. Chris Check here with us, Joe Heschmeyer here with us. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. You guys have ever seen one of these things on the internet where they it's a story, but you click a little button and a slide changes, and then a little more of the story comes. And
you're describing a slideshow?
Slideshow. Yeah, that's what it is. So Thanks. Well, I don't know all your fancy words.
Can I say something about slides?
Yeah.
When I was a young child, my father was a very talented photographer, and he only took slides.
Oh, yeah?
And I think that was called ektachrome. That was the kind of film you had to use for slides.
Yeah.
And my parents...
put it in the carousel and watch it later.
My parents would have dinner parties where they'd invite two other couples, and then my dad would show...
the ektachrome?
His slides to... you know, of their trip to Greece or whatever it was.
I loved slideshows. This is a loss for the world that we don't, no one's got that noisy slide machine.
But back then, serious photographers, you took slides.
Yeah.
So I've only ever seen this depicted negatively. I want to preface this by saying we're divided here by a generational gap, and I've never experienced the thing you're describing. And I've
you've never experienced the slide carousel and that whole thing, like the.
Kid, like in grade school, but it was never like a fun. Here's someone who's really gifted at this kind of thing. I've seen people do a PowerPoint they projected onto a white screen.
No, it's not a PowerPoint. Effect. It's a totally different experience than a PowerPoint. First of all, it's much more vivid. But why is this a negative experience for you?
Well, I'm saying I've only seen it depicted negatively in film.
Yeah.
That just like it's like oh, like it's sort of boring thing kids grow up with. Well, like dad came home from his trip, and now he's going to show you 10 different pictures that look the same.
Yeah, actually, it was very convivial and popular. There was one other couple. I think their name were the Pringles or something like that. And so my parents always made a joke about the potato chips. But they would come over, and they were both travelers. Both couples were travelers, and they shared slides of their. And my father was very good at I don't know the last time he held a camera, but he was very good at composing a shot, which is something you had to do back then because you couldn't take 10 billion.
That slide was expensive.
Yeah.
Joe, when I was a child, and I imagine this is also the case when Chris was a child, but he probably went to fancier schools than I did. The coveted job was to be the film strip, be the person who kept the film strip in sync with the tape that was playing at the same time. Every time your bell rang, ding, you have to turn it. And the girls could do it, and the boys couldn't. And the girls would be so frustrated with the boys. You're not in sync. That boys would be like, I don't, huh? Like boys do. But yeah,
I feel like we need to get you a therapist for this. It seems like.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of things I couldn't do. But you never had the film strip? Oh my gosh. It's like the best part of elementary school is when you get chosen to do the film script.
Projectors with like yellow light. And now these are also arcade.
Well, that's an overhead projector.
Yeah, we had those. We didn't have any, like, there was no flipping through. There was none of that.
Well, I don't know.
This is a reason.
Those are all gone.
This is a reason, by the way, one of many why girl altar boys is problematic.
Because boys need something to do.
Because immediately the girl's going to come in and they're going to do it better than the boys do.
Oh, well, that's true of a lot of stuff.
And then the boys will lose interest. So now there are probably more girl altar boys than boy altar boys.
Hey, I want to propose something. I've been kicking this around in my head. I've never shared it with another person. And I'm going to.
Are you sure this is a good idea, Joe?
There's millions.
This is not sounding like a good plan, but all right, go ahead.
Project Renovate, R-E-N-O. Stands for Reverend English Novus Ordo, Renovate.
Yeah.
Just have like basic principles that priests can agree to and everyone involved in like the
I love
liturgy.
I love it.
You know, the Latin language is very divisive. There's a few other things that are really divisive, but take the really kind of low hanging fruit and just say, okay, everybody agree to these things. We'll really cultivate these things and let those fights happen kind of in sync. Where you have a lot of brothers in arms who are pushing for the same things.
Can we have a manifesto? Can we get a manifesto?
I have one. Face God. The priest faces God.
No, I mean
God lives in the East.
God the priest faces God. How about everybody faces God?
I like renovate. Tell me what the R-E-N-O stands for again, though.
Reverent English Novus Ordo.
Reverend English Novus Ordo.
We're not going to do the Latin fight. We'll do everything else. And then once people have that elevated liturgical sensibility, then if you want to start talking some Latin at them, they're in a better place to receive it. But you cannot go from the ordinary parish experience at a suburban parish to a Latin mass. It's just too culturally different. And you know, some people are going to love that cultural like whiplash, but a lot of people are going to be really put off by it, especially, frankly, people who are a little older.
Cassock and surplus for the altar boys.
Yes, exactly. So you got the idea. You know, mean having just, ad orientem, yeah, because, having...
So that what you have is a sense of being out of the world into the place where we encounter something that's not of this world, that's not worldly. I love all of that. I love all of that. And you do it in a way that people don't understand, I think, when you start talking that way, if they've never experienced it, how pleasant it is. And I don't mean pleasant like just it's fun or something, but there is it doesn't feel like a burden when you experience it. It feels like a relief almost, like this really is a step out of that hustle and bustle that's outside those two front doors.
Think about how different it would be in a movie theater if they didn't turn the lights off. Like if you were watching the film, but you were still like totally aware of everything else.
I would never be able to
get
all the food that I snuck in out of my pants.
My point is like you can't immerse yourself in the thing if it's that attached to the daily life.
That's right.
And so
it's supposed
to be
something
a
different.
Of a break to be immersive. And this just speaks to us on a human level.
Get rid of the microphones.
Oh, well, let me ask you this, though. I'm going to go to a call because we got a gentleman I'd like to talk to.
Are we going
to
find out what Pope Francis
just
said?
Just a quick yes or no question for the Renovate movement that we've now started. Harmonicas in church or no? It's a yes or no question.
No on that.
Hard no. All right. Colin in Des Moines. Can you help me again with line one? Colin in Des Moines, which is in Iowa, listening on the great Iowa Catholic Radio. Colin, go ahead with your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, at what point does it become like necessary or appropriate or good to disengage from the news?
1983.
I feel like a lot of the time I'm watching the news and like I'm like terrified about the state of the world. It makes me angry and miserable. And like but I don't feel like I have a lot of agency to do anything about it a lot of the time, other than of course like pray or spiritual, you know, responses. So what are the pros and cons of disengaging? When should a person disengage from the news? That kind of thing. Thank you.
I'm going to say, if you know it's disturbing your peace, that's a good time to disengage.
That's why I quit. I don't watch it.
I don't watch the news either. This is why, by the way, I'm lousy on the flannel panel, because
that's like, not the only reason.
I'm supposed to know all these things that are going on. But I would say if you know it's disturbing your peace. The other thing is it wasting your time? Is there something more fruitful that you could be doing? People ask me, how do I live in the state of California? And I say, it has a ton of natural beauty. My friends and my job are here, and I don't watch the news.
I can tell you this, too. One good thing about the internet is an entire half-hour news broadcast, everything that you get in that, you can get in 2 minutes of searching the web news. And you don't have to get the opinion and the attitude of the reporters and the hosts who are all pushing some agenda. They tell you they're not, but of course they are. So just look it up yourself.
One of the agendas they all have in common is entertainment. Like all forms of media news are entertainment.
My recommendation. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, go ahead.
Television news in particular, though, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So that is a uniquely bad medium.
I'd say the time to stop is now, Colin.
Yep.
What do you think? Wait, Colin, we missed you.
I said it sounds good to me. You're right. Sounds like you're right.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people feel like, no, I have a civic responsibility. No,
you don't.
Yeah,
you
can. I feel that too.
You can cover that civic responsibility with a quick glance at the web in the morning. You get if something big happened, like a fire in Hawaii, you go, hey, I need to know more about this, and you need a place to send your check or something. But in general, nothing happens, and that's worth knowing about anyways. Keep moving.
And it's worth, it's easy to sound the civic duty alarm. But think about the last time you actually did anything with the information.
That's what Colin was saying.
This is what I was
saying. Colin's saying, I have no agency here. What's the point?
Henry David Thoreau, when the telegraph was invented, said, we are in a great haste to construct a magnetic telegraph from Maine to Texas. The Maine and Texas, it may be, have nothing important to communicate. We're eager to tunnel under the Atlantic and bring the old world some weeks nearer to the new. But perchance, the first news that will leak through into the broad, flapping American ear will be that Princess Adelaide has the whooping cough.
Yeah.
And so the point is, you don't need that.
No.
Doesn't matter. In the old days when news was local, it typically mattered pretty directly on your life. Now, when you're hearing about things that you have no control over half a world away, all it does is it disturbs you, because here's the thing. There's more bad news in a day than your heart can comprehend or take in. There's more good news, but nobody tells you about that stuff. But right. just when you've got billions of people, the amount of bad news that you can find on any given day, it's immense and overwhelming. And then if you can make people fight about it, it really is like a perfectly designed engine for tearing people down spiritually.
Chesterton said we've invented the most efficient trumpet for saying things at the very moment when we have nothing to say. I mean, you could do a test for a week and watch the news and then say, what did I do about any of those things? I would venture to say that there's nothing on the news that you need to know about. And if it is something that you need to know about, Providence is going to find a way for you to find out about it.
Let me propose another test. If you do this for a week, I'd love to hear the results. For a week, when you would watch the news, pray Vespers instead. Evening prayer.
Yes.
And then, and then just don't worry about the news. And if some big news story happens, you can bet 1,000 people will tell you about it.
If you're saying to yourself, I can't pray Vespers because I got to watch the news, definitely stop watching the news.
And by the way, if you're going to pray Vespers, use a book. Don't use an app.
Okay. Well, I had it memorized, so whatever. I got to tell you, Colin, thanks. I hope that was helpful. It was a wonderful
what
call.
What did Pope Francis say in an airplane?
So. All right. So I was looking at the slideshow. Joe told me what it's called. And the reporting on this slideshow was on MSNBC, but they instead of just giving you an article, they give you a slideshow, which is – it's silly.
It's more clicks, you see more ads. That's
well,
what
it's silly. And then it's also – the reporting itself is juvenile. And so I'm not doing any more slideshows, but this is what the headline was that was on the slideshow. Pope welcomes LGBTQ plus worshipers to Catholic Church whilst this is what it says, whilst confirming homosexuality is still a, and it's in quotes, sin. Yeah.
So, I like they put the wrong part in quotation marks.
I know.
There's another part of that should be in quotation marks.
Well, first of all, who uses the word whilst? I almost gave up right there.
That's the part I'm happiest about in this headline.
Then it's just the story goes on and on and on. But I was reading it and I thought, that's not news at all. Like the Pope said, God loves homosexual people. They're welcome in the church, but there's rules. Like there's moral rules. That's what the Pope, like he actually said that he didn't even say sin. He said rules. That's what he said in Spanish. And
so when they put quotation marks around sin, it's not even a quotation.
No, they're sneer quoting a word that he didn't even use. So, but my point is like, that's what the Pope said is basic Catholic teaching. Yeah, why are they acting like this
is newsworthy news story? I mean, it's great that they're acknowledging the Pope is indeed Catholic, and maybe they can do a report on bears and woods after this.
I know, right? I know. The bears, they woke up, and then they went back to sleep in the fall. There's no news here. Well, I don't know.
No, it was a setup for the last slide there, which was the quotes from the disgruntled people.
That's exactly
That's
it.
That's the whole and point. The Pope has let us down again.
Well, there's an old trick in journalism where you say, critics say, right? Okay. You're not actually quoting anybody. This what critics say means is this is what the reporter really thinks.
Right.
You know?
What I want you to take away from this.
Yes. Yeah. And so now they don't even say critics say anymore. They go to like Twitter and they get a couple of tweets. So any disgruntled person on earth could tweet something negative about the Pope, and that's the equivalent of what the Pope said.
I want to quote one of these disgruntled Twitter users because they quote two at the end.
Okay.
And so the Pope says, everybody's welcome. You know, you're beloved by God. There are rules. And now, again, this is true of literally everyone on earth. But then one Twitter user wrote, in other words, it's not open to LGBT people, especially if any of the rules are celibacy, not marrying, and being allowed to adopt. Don't fall for it, folks. It's really remarkable that he views this as a gross violation of his rights to not be able to adopt. I want to just tie that into the earlier story.
Wait a second. Excuse me.
The actual discrimination in adoption that in real life is going on is in exactly the opposite direction.
Yeah, but
there's no state that I know of that is even trying to ban gay adoption. There are states that are actively stopping straight people who believe in marriage.
Oh, they've already shut down Catholic Charities adoption in more than a dozen states. Like literally have shut it down. Catholic Charities can't help with adoptions because they don't go along
you
with
know
the
who
LGBTQ+.
Led the way in
plus
that, was Bishop Thomas Doran of Rockford, Illinois.
And he just didn't cave.
Yeah, that, and that was like, what, 20 years ago? He just said, well, we're not going to do it anymore.
But a little note to NBC News or MSNBC News, just read the Catechism of the Catholic Church. When the Pope says something that's already in there, that's not news. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Are you going to come to Rome with us in November?
I am. We'll see who else joins us.
CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com.
CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Chris Check, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Si.
And you're going to be, you're looking forward to the pilgrimage in Rome?
It's the most walkable city in the world.
And we're going to walk it, too. We're going to have some fun. CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. I'm Si Kellett, your host. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time. That's tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.